to me, development, efficiency, and winning are sort of the three things conceptually that I want to focus on every day, all the time. And that applies to myself, and that applies to our staff, and it certainly applies to the student athletes in the program.
In the competitive coaching world, adopting a CEO approach can set a leader apart. Coach Pete Lembo, the new head coach at the University of Buffalo, exemplifies this approach through his emphasis on organization, development, and creating a balanced team. His success can be attributed to his innate inclination towards meticulous planning and continuous improvement. Coach Lembo's journey in various coaching roles highlights the importance of adapting and evolving in this profession. One key aspect of Coach Lembo's approach is a commitment to personal and professional development. His belief in continuously honing skills and seeking growth opportunities is evident in his career path, such as transitioning to a special teams coordinator role at South Carolina. This willingness to step out of his comfort zone and embrace new challenges underscores the importance of staying open-minded and adaptable in the ever-changing landscape of coaching. There's a ton to learn from in this episode. Get your notebook and pen and be ready to learn from Coach Lembo's experience. We'll share our winning edge takeaways after the interview. What you see on tape is a direct reflection of what you teach and how you teach. Video is important, but if you don't teach well, you're not going to like what you see on your video. First Down Playbook has been helping coaches teach better for 13 years. It allows you to present installs, playbooks, and practice cards in half the time with NFL quality. Coaching tools like video pairing, a player app, practice schedules, and wristband sheets have made First Down Playbook a program management system with everything in one place. If you're in a position of leadership with your football program, receive a free one-week look at First Down Playbook. Call them at 512-814-6158 or visit them on their website or social media. Mention Coach and Coordinator Podcast or use the coupon code COACH24 to receive a $100 discount off the normal $700 First Down Playbook team membership price. Links and the phone number are in the show notes. As coaches, we know that some of the biggest hurdles to our team's success can come from off the field. Your team needs support to tackle the endless list of expenses, uniforms, training equipment, travel, and more. But raising that money can feel like a full-time job. Thankfully, there's Vertical Raise. Vertical Raise is the premier online fundraising platform using innovative technology to create the easiest and most efficient system available. Raise more money in less time with a local fundraising coach who works with your team every step of the way to customize the ideal fundraiser. With options for online donations, digital discount cards, premium product sales, and even spirit shops, Vertical Raise has top-of-the-line solutions for every fundraising style. To find out more, visit verticalraise.com and we'll get you connected with an exclusive offer on your first fundraiser. On today's episode, we're going to dig into a CEO approach to becoming a head coach, and I was fortunate to be able to see our guest today in action when he was the head coach at Ball State. And then, of course, what I typically do is follow coaches and follow what they do throughout their careers. And the common thread I've seen with Coach Pete Lembo is that he is extremely organized and that the approach he takes is about developing people. It's about developing a program, whether that's been something he's done with special teams and helping a head coach develop a culture as a whole, or developing his own program. And we're going to dig into all the things that are really a part of that today. So joining us is the head coach at the University of Buffalo, Pete Lembo. Coach, it's great to have you here on the podcast.
Good morning. It's great to be here as well. I appreciate you having me on.
So Coach, I want to dig into the approach you take, and you know, I think something that is uniquely you, as I've watched you over your career, is that you are extremely organized in your approach. And I think because of that, it has enabled you to be successful wherever you've been, whatever you've been doing. You've been an offensive coordinator. You've been a special teams coordinator, coach, of course, now back to being a head coach. How did that develop for you? Was that something that you always just paid attention to, or is that something that you learned over time?
Well, I think we all have different God-given skills and different strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, going back to as early as I can remember, I was always somebody that put lists together and checklists and outlines. And it's just sort of how I learned and how I went about my life. Tried to always be able to juggle multiple balls in the air. I was fortunate that I did get a business degree, and I'm thankful every day that I have that, especially, you know, with the different jobs that I've had as a head coach and as a special teams coordinator, where you feel like at times it can be a little bit overwhelming and you've got to pull things together and pull people together. So I think some skills come a little bit more naturally to me than others. And I think that's probably true for all of us. We sometimes have to work at the things that maybe are a little bit harder or that we don't like as much. But whatever that case may be, I think there's a way of going about it where you are comfortable with yourself, where you are try to be as genuine and authentic with the people that you're working with day to day. And then hopefully surround yourself with people that have other strengths than you have so that you can create some balance and harmony within your organization.
I know when I was a young head coach and I had a business degree too, but there's always that feeling that, boy, you have to know it all. And you do. You need to know exactly how you want to run your program in all aspects. I mean, when you look at the business side of things, somebody being a chief executive officer, you have to understand how everything is going to work together. But at the same time, you don't necessarily have to be the guru. You mentioned being able to play to your own strengths and then filling in those spots, understanding your weaknesses and finding people who are strong as well. I hear people say all the time, you never want to be the smartest guy in the room, right? And I think that's true of being a head coach. You want to be able to sit down at that table and see that, you know, I'm not the guru of everything here. And I feel good about that. I'm comfortable with that because in that word, CEO, chief executive officer, it comes down to execute. And that's really what you're in charge for, not being the smartest guy in the room, but making sure that everything gets executed. So how do you go about putting together, you know, you just started right now, new staff at Buffalo. How do you put that all together and thinking of, all right, here's what I do well, here's what this guy does well, and making sure that you're filling in those holes and creating a tight organization?
Well, again, being yourself and being comfortable with yourself. And I've always been one to believe in balance. I totally agree with what you said. If you go into a room and try to make people think you're the smartest guy in the room on every single thing that's going to be touched on, pretty quickly people figure out that you're not sincere and that you aren't the smartest guy in the room. So I would prefer to take a more humble approach to that and try to create a more flat organization where everybody is expected to contribute. And there are different experts in different areas. That's why you're here. We brought you in because you have a certain expertise. And you might be 25 years old and a graduate assistant or an analyst or a young entry-level person in a certain area, an auxiliary area of the program. But we want to create an environment where those people feel comfortable speaking up and talking about what they know and trying to get everybody else in the room on the same page. Now, I think as a CEO, and I'm going to throw a little pop culture into this, a little Austin Powers, you know, danger is my middle name. And I think you need to know just enough to be dangerous in all of those areas. Because if you're ignorant to certain things or you don't attack the things that maybe don't come as natural or you don't naturally like, then pretty quickly, the people that are in charge of those aspects of the program start to say, oh, well, the boss doesn't care about me and what I do. So for example, strength and conditioning. You know, I was really into strength and conditioning when I was a player, but anybody that knows me knows I'm not the most dedicated workout guy, especially in these last 5 weeks since I got to UB. But I've got to go out of my way to show our strength coach that what he does is really, really important and that I really, really care about him and the program that he's developing and the work that he's putting into with our team right now. So in every staff meeting, I'm going to encourage him to speak up and give us an update on his area, how our players are doing, any challenges that he's incurring, how I can help, how we can help. And you expect everybody else in the room to give him his full attention. So I think at the end of the day, there's got to be great balance there.
in looking at that balance and developing people. We're in a world today where everybody looks for the quick fix, the instant gratification. Well, I'll just go out and get this guy. He's better. And I think there has to be that balance. I think you understand where there are weaknesses, whether that's on a coaching staff, whether that's on your roster, whether that's in your support staff, and you want those to become as strong as they possibly can. So it is finding the balance between maybe this isn't the right fit here with this particular person, and you know, maybe this can be better by developing that person. So finding that balance. I think today's best programs and the ones who will deal with all the chaos that we've seen, you know, with Portal and all the things that go along with it, is that there will be a strong sense of development within that program that you need to think twice about, what do I really want to leave here? Because this guy at the top and his staff, they care about me and they're developing me. So how do you find that balance today, coach, to make that work where you are always finding those A players, but at the same time, developing A players?
Yeah, development is really, to me, one of the key elements to any person and any program. To me, development, efficiency, and winning are sort of the three things conceptually that I want to focus on every day, all the time. And that applies to myself, and that applies to our staff, and it certainly applies to the student athletes in the program. Let me get into a little bit of detail on that. I had a tough time in my 20s in this profession. I came out of a school that was not a football powerhouse. I was a Division III player. The very same year I got into coaching, the NCAA cut from 5 GAs to 2, and the market was absolutely flooded with young coaches. So my 20s were a real struggle. But what I was able to do was get around some really good people and develop as a coach. And even though I wasn't making any money and didn't have any health benefits and all that kind of stuff, I just poured into trying to develop myself and get a great foundation in place. And then all of a sudden, when I was a head coach at age 31, I was probably better prepared than a lot of 31-year-olds would have been because of a lot of those struggles that I had in my 20s, but the really, really good people that I was around. Now, fast forward to I'm 45 years old and I'm a head coach in an FBS program, and I decide to leave to go take a Power 5 special teams coordinator job, which a lot of people probably would not have made that move at that point in their career and been comfortable enough to do that. But I knew at that point in my career that I needed to go back and develop more. I had not been exposed to certain aspects of college football that I felt like I needed to be. I felt like I had gotten somewhat stagnant as a coach, and a lot of the really good people that had come up with me during those opportunities as a head coach at three different places had moved on to bigger and better things. And here I was, and I was sort of in a stagnant spot. And so the last 8+ years for me were incredible, like getting a PhD in college football, because I was in some Power 5 and some Group of 5 programs. I was working for some new head coaches that were thrown into the fire for the first time, working for some really good people like Mike Norvell and Shane Beamer. So that gave me a chance to look at things from a totally different perspective and really eye-opening for me the last 8 or 9 years, and really have prepared me so well to come back and do this again here at UB. Developing your staff is an ongoing process every day. And that doesn't mean that it has to always be fourth and goal at the 1-yard line every minute in the office. I don't believe in that. But I do think you have to hold people accountable. I do think you have to create a great structure for them to grow and develop. Even as hectic as it's been here the last 5 weeks, we have dedicated time every day as a staff to football. And at times it's just as simple as football 101, making sure that we're all talking the same language, making sure that we are being efficient as we work with our players to develop them and keeping everybody on the same page and speaking the same language. And then you mentioned development of the players. Well, to me, there's so many aspects of that. There's the strength and conditioning that we touched on earlier. There's character and leadership development, which at our level, I take the front seat and sort of the bus driver approach to that, because we don't necessarily have some of the player development people that you might have at a Power Five school. So I think the head coach has got to be involved with that. Your coordinators and your position coaches, your special teams coordinator are handling a lot of the football development stuff. And I need to make sure that I'm staying plugged into all of that. Yes, this is a day and age where you might pour your heart and soul into a player for a year or two, and then he may turn around and leave you because he's got opportunities to go to a bigger program and opportunities with NIL and so forth. But I don't think that changes the spirit of what you do and how you do it. It may be more of a race than a marathon nowadays, because your roster changes more year to year. There may be some more heartbreaking moments because you've poured everything you have into a young man. And even though he may really like and enjoy the program he's in, the opportunity may be so good that, you know, he's still got no other choice but to move on. I think you just have to embrace that those changes are part of the landscape in 2024 and not let it dampen your spirit or hold back your energy to crank it up and start all over again. And just know that you might have a player joining you in January or in June that you really have to accelerate that process with to put him in the very best position to be successful come August.
I've always been interested in the use of technology to make our jobs more effective, so I'm excited to continue sharing modern football technology with you here on the podcast. This innovative system leverages tendencies to improve self-scouting, game planning, and in-game decision-making at the speed of the game. Modern football stands out because it's a battle-tested platform used by teams at all levels, like four-time national champion Bishop Gorman, the five-time California State champion Folsom Bulldogs, six-time Texas State champion Lake Travis, Cal football, and the CFL's Grey Cup champions, the Montreal Alouettes. So book a demo today to see why these teams trust modern football technology. Visit www.teammofo.com/demo and mention Coach and Coordinator Podcast, or use the coupon code CC10 to receive 10% off your first year.
We talked a little bit about the changing dynamics of the game just now, but thinking of your growth, you mentioned, you know, taking the opportunity at South Carolina as a special teams coach, you know, from being a head coach at the FBS level at Ball State, and in your growth through that time, what do you feel is different about you now as you apply it to getting back to the head coaching seat at the University of Buffalo?
Yeah, if I had to sum it up in one word, it would be perspective. There were so many benefits coming up through the small school ranks for me, and I would still highly encourage young coaches to take a lower level full-time job when they can get it. Division III, Division II, FCS, where you have to wear so many hats and you're just around so many good people that are doing things for all the right reasons, that I think it's just so helpful in your growth and development as a coach. And I look back and I wouldn't change a thing from those experiences at smaller schools. But getting the opportunities that I did at places like South Carolina, at Maryland, at Memphis, it can be eye-opening in a lot of ways. The recruiting at the very highest level in the SEC in particular was really eye-opening, and proving to myself that I could recruit at that level and contribute at that level was incredibly satisfying. I can't tell you how many people I talked to before I took the job at South Carolina warned me, for lack of a better term, about what it was going to be like getting in there and getting your hands dirty, you know, recruiting at that level. And I thoroughly enjoyed it and really appreciated the opportunity to do it, and felt very good about contributing with our staff, whether that be, you know, area recruiting, up in the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic where I had a lot of familiarity, or recruiting specialists, or whatever the task may be, just chipping in on recruiting weekends when we had different VIP visitors, you know, coming into Columbia. I thought it was awesome. Seeing that perspective on recruiting and what can be done with those kinds of resources, even though you've got to certainly scale things back with the size of a staff in a group of five school like UB, it does give you some really good creative ideas, how to attack things, how to use social media, how to engage families and so forth. And I thought Shane Beamer did a really, really nice job with that. Mike Norvell did such a fabulous job. He and I were so alike, and Shane for that matter too, when it came to the structure of practices and the flow of practices and staff organization and the flow of a day, different meetings throughout the day to make sure that those days were being utilized in the most efficient, effective ways to maximize everybody's time. Not guard your desk necessarily, but make sure that you were being impactful with the time you had in the office. I had never experienced morning practices until I went to Memphis and worked for Mike Norvell. And that was a huge change for me. I had always been an afternoon practice guy, and this was an opportunity to learn the flow of the week and a totally different structure with the morning practices. And since that time, that's exactly what we did at South Carolina the last 3 years, and that's what we will do here at Buffalo moving forward. So you have to keep learning, you have to keep growing, you have to keep developing, and I think you have to be very open in sharing some of those ideas with your new group of people wherever you may land.
You mentioned being impactful in the office, and I could say in general now, I've come to dislike meetings because most of them are not run well, but I love being a part of a good meeting, right? For you, what's the key to making sure that that time in the office is impactful, that those meetings that you have aren't just to sit down and talk with each other and see yourselves face to face, or, you know, guard that conference room too, right? We guard our desks sometimes, we guard that conference room, but to make sure that what we're doing here, the time we're spending, is going to make an impact on your program. Because you, again, in that CEO type of role, you know, you want to make sure that everybody has the info and goes out and executes. So what's the keys to, you know, being effective in a meeting like that?
Well, I feel like I keep going back to balance, but there is a fine line between not meeting enough and meeting too much. Because I think if your everyday staff meeting turns out to be the Bataan Death March, you know, pretty soon guys start to shut it down and they don't look forward to going in there. But if your staff meetings are organized, have a purpose, are helping people get better at what they do and get on the same page, then hopefully guys are looking forward to going in there because it's positive building time for them personally and for the program, you know, versus something that's just going to end up being confrontational and negative and maybe prolonged to a point where they're losing focus. So right now we're in a flow where in the off season, we're meeting two, maybe three times a week as a staff. You know, obviously you get into the season and you're looking at more of a daily staff meeting, but hopefully a shorter staff meeting where you're letting guys, you know, get back to doing what they need to do. But even when we're not meeting as a staff, there is going to be a structure to the day. I'm going to send out some daily reminders about the things that are going to happen today or things that are going to happen this week. I always like to be aware of different guests and visitors that are going to be coming through the office that day, just so people are in the right frame of mind to put their best foot forward when we do have folks coming by. So even if you're not meeting per se as a staff, with technology this day and age, there's really no reason not to be organized and on the same page. And I like to tell our guys, better to over-communicate than to surprise someone.
So Coach, to wrap up, we talked quite a bit about process and the organization, the attention to detail. We didn't mention vision though. We'll finish up with that. And your vision for University of Buffalo football, when you get to that how you get to that, that's the process. And as Bill Walsh said, the score takes care of itself. So you focus on the process, that's it. But it always starts with the vision. What's the vision for University of Buffalo football?
Well, I couldn't agree more than focusing on the process. But ultimately, you want the sum to be greater than the parts. And if you bring in the right people at every level of the organization and really scrutinize the people that you're bringing in to make sure that they are the right fit and really want to be at Buffalo, and then work day in and day out to develop them in a holistic way so they can be the best they can be, you've got a chance to put a team on the field that reaches its potential. And hopefully that's a team that competes for conference championships and goes to bowl games regularly, but also a group of people and a team that the university and the community can take great pride in. And so it's not just about X's and O's. It's more about that holistic development where your guys are looking to max out their experience academically. This is a great school. We're the 36th ranked public institution in the country. So we want our guys to get a great education here. But we also have a great city, a great town, a very prideful community with a lot of great opportunities. So we want our guys to be invested in the community, invested on campus, so that when they leave here, and hopefully it is after 4 or 5 years, but even if it's only after a couple years because they transferred in, or maybe they leave at some point in their career for greener pastures, that they're going to look back and feel very positive about the experience they had here and leave here with some great relationships.
Coach, I really appreciate you taking some time out here. I know you're a busy man right now getting this going at the University of Buffalo, but thank you for all the insight you shared into coaching and into the profession, to what you guys are doing at Buffalo.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. It was a lot of fun.
Here are Winning Edge takeaways and ideas for implementation. 1, emphasize organization and development. Coach Lembo's approach of being extremely organized and focusing on developing people and programs has been a key to his success. You can implement this by creating clear structures, setting goals, and investing in the growth of both your staff and players. 2, seek a balance of skills and perspectives. Coach Lembo highlights the importance of surrounding yourself with individuals who have different strengths and expertise than you do. By acknowledging your own weaknesses and bringing in team members who complement those areas, you can build a well-rounded staff that fosters collaboration and innovation. And 3, prioritize continuous learning and adaptation. Coach Lembo's experiences in transitioning between roles and programs demonstrates the value of ongoing development and openness to new ideas. Embrace opportunities to learn from different environments, seek feedback, and stay current with trends in the game to enhance your effectiveness and stay ahead in this ever-evolving profession. Follow all we're doing on X at Coach K Grabowski and at coachingcoordinator.com. You can sign up there for our weekly tip sheet, which shares the best ideas from each week. If you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to rate and review on Apple or Spotify.